The following presentation is the audio of one of five webinars on practical social networking presented by Ian Griffin and Jim Carrillo in September 2009. A recording of the complete series of webinars, which includes the visual element of the screen referenced in this audio-only version, is available for purchase at socialnetworking101.biz.
So let's get going. This is Practical Social Networking, the fourth in the series on podcasting and YouTube, and we are going to cover these audio and visual elements of social networking today in a good deal of depth, but giving you very practical steps. So let's see, I guess I should take over now. And here's our agenda for the day. We're going to be talking about reaching out with podcasting. That will be a general discussion on what podcasts are and how valuable they can be. Even if you don't create podcasts, I think they're a great source of streaming information that you can listen to in the car or while you're out exercising. We talk about how to create a podcast of your own in terms of scripting, producing, and publishing. Those are the three steps that you'll also see we approach with video. The third section of our agenda is video, which is mainly we're going to be talking about YouTube and how that plays in social networking. I just heard today at a conference this morning, YouTube is the second largest search engine in the world now, after obviously Google. And then finally, we'll conclude the webinar with some practical applications that Jim and I like to share from our own experience. What you'll learn in the class today is how to create videos and podcasts that people want to tune into and share with others. That's the key to making these part of social networking, is having them become, sometimes people say, go viral, but having them be of value to others. We'll give you practical tips on scripting, producing, and publishing your own podcasts and videos. We'll show you how easily and quickly you can create and publish your first podcast today. In fact, before you go to bed tonight, if you wish, you can have a podcast. And finally, we'll show you effective ways you can create a video sitting at your own desk, just logged into YouTube, assuming, of course, you have a web camera. You can't do video without a web camera. So let's start. I'll cover now, for about the next 15 minutes, the podcasting part of this webinar series. Podcasting, I personally have done this for about 3 years. I've done about 70 podcasts. They're on my blog, if you search for Ian Griffin's blog. And you can find all my podcasts there. Now, the key thing I'd like to start with, the name is very confusing. You do not need an iPod, even though that's where the word podcasting, I think, originated, to be somebody who can either enjoy listening to or create podcasts. As all you need is a microphone or a headset with a microphone that plugs into your computer, which could be a laptop or a desk-side computer with speakers. That's all. Now, I've actually renamed the term podcast to mean personal on-demand audio would be my definition of what podcasting is.
Now, so, Ian.
Yes.
So you don't need an iPod to create a podcast. You need an iPod to listen to a podcast, or?
Absolutely not. Podcasts can be listened to on any computer, which 99% or all of them today do have speakers. If you like to buy external speakers at Radio Shack, you can get a better listening experience. But your laptop, either put your little earbuds in or listen to it with the speakers built in, and you go to the websites where you find the podcasts, like my blog or iTunes that I'll be showing you, and you can listen away. The advantage of an iPod, of course, is you can, as people who own iPods know, you can sync it, as it's called, to the computer and then go off and go jogging, sit in the car, take it to the beach, listen to the stuff without needing to be sitting next to a computer. So podcasting, this is the symbol for a podcast, is defined as asynchronous on-demand audio. What does that mean? Well, basically what it means is that the podcast that you listen to, it's like a radio show. In fact, it's your own personal radio show if you create one, or it's like people can, it used to be there was only what, even, well, in the UK where I grew up, there's just really the BBC, so there's one radio station, if you like, for the whole country with maybe 10 channels. In this country, in the US, since forever, there's been a huge variety of radio stations, but in, say, the San Francisco area, you can still only tune into maybe 20 or 30. maybe 40, I don't know, Spanish language, talk radio, and so on. Podcasting, there's tens or hundreds of thousands of podcast channels out there, and the key difference is you don't need to be listening to them like you do with radio. You need to be at home at 5 p.m. to hear the 5 p.m. talk show. If you miss it, tough luck. With podcasting, it's stored and available for syndication. Now, we won't get into the technology of this. It's called RSS, or Real Simple Syndication. What it means to you as a consumer is you can subscribe to a podcast. If you subscribe, every time there's an update, you will be notified through iTunes or whatever your subscription method is. Main thing is it puts you at the center of it. You can decide when and how often you want to listen to these. On my iPod, and I do use an iPod, but I don't necessarily need to, I've probably got 400 or 500 podcasts because I subscribe to about 20 of them, and each one might have 10 or 15 episodes because I can delete old ones as I listen to them. So if you're not familiar with podcasts, the best way to find them is to go to iTunes. And for those of you who don't know, there might be some of you out there, iTunes is a free music software management software package that you can download from the Apple website. So go to apple.com. You don't need a Mac. PC's fine. There's free software called iTunes. Download and install it. People use it to manage their music collection, and as a whole, those of you who know this, it's old hat, but I still find people who don't know iTunes shrug their shoulders. When you're in iTunes, go to the iTunes Music Store. There's a button for podcasts, and do a search. I did a search on the word business. Now, there's what on this? There's 21 podcasts just on this page, and you see this is page 2 of 5. So there's over 50 or 60 podcasts on the with the keyword business, such as Kipling's personal finance podcast, 3 down on the right, such as the Harvard Business IdeaCast. You might get books on authors like 48 Days to the Work You Love. I think that's an author by Dan Miller. The guy with the red beard in the bottom left-hand corner is a colleague when I used to work at HP. He's the chief technology officer, a guy called Phil McKinney, for Hewlett-Packard's laptop division, and he has a podcast called Killer Innovations. These are just the podcasts about business. There are podcasts about every topic you can imagine: macrame, quilting, French cuisine, exercising your dog. There'll be podcasts about that. And I've got one called Professionally Speaking. So if you're not familiar with podcasts, if the one thing you get out of the webinar today is just these are a fantastic source of real-time information that you can hear and update yourself with in a painless way, driving the car, walking the dog, sitting around at home in the evening, you can veg out and listen to podcasts. And I listen to them very regularly. I'll just say as an aside, you can probably tell I didn't grow up in California. It's not that I'm from back east in Massachusetts. I'm from way back east in England. And I grew up listening to the BBC, and I just think they've got some of the best radio programs out there. Every BBC radio program for a whole week that's broadcast in the UK is archived on the bbc.co.uk website. And I download some folk music ones. I download some current affairs ones, and I just listen to them whenever I can. Didn't used to be able to do that, you know, when I first came to the U.S. 25 years ago. So podcasting, we've sort of given you a little flavor of what it is. It's available anytime you want to listen to them. They're free. All of those ones I showed you on the previous screen, 99% of all podcasts are free. So let's talk about how you would produce a podcast. Well, there's 3 steps. This is boiling it down to the basics. There's 3 things you do. You have to have some kind of a script. Now, it's not necessarily the tragedy of Hamlet, like William Shakespeare wrote a script for a play, but it's along those lines, whether it's an interview or it's a podcast that you do at sitting at home as an expert like Phil McKinney speaking into the microphone for 20 minutes, or you're going out to podcast a class or a seminar series. You have to have, or the people speaking have to know what they're talking about, and you can edit the script. After you've recorded it, you can take out the ums and ahs, you can even cut out misstatements, but you do have to script it. You then have to record it, the microphone in the middle, which could be done just at the computer or even on the phone, just talking into the phone, or a high-end microphone. And then finally, this is a misleading icon. You don't broadcast it out through the air like the old AM, FM radio stations still do. You do it through the internet. Podcasts are only available through internet websites. So that's the 3 steps. Let's take a look at the first step, scripting. Now, I would say, this is Ian Griffin's own interpretation, there are actually only three types of podcasts in general. He's a typologist. There's the expert, like that guy Phil McKinney, I would say speaking alone or pontificating, if you like to use that word, at home or in their office, alone into a microphone. There's quite a few podcasts like this. Some authors do podcasts where they read a chapter of their book for an episode, and they might have a 40-chapter book. There's 40 episodes of the podcast. There's a sci-fi author called Scott Seidler in the Bay Area, and he actually got himself published, couldn't find a publisher, read his novel that he'd written, you know, a year back, nobody would publish, put it out as a podcast in 40 episodes, got 3,000 fans, and the publishers loved him. They immediately said, yeah, yeah, we'll publish your book. So if you've got expertise, if you're the tax expert or the dog walking expert or the innovation expert, you can go away and create a podcast. I would say this is the most work, because you've got to be scripted, you've got to have fresh, interesting content week in and week out. Another way to podcast, and we've done this in the National Speakers Association of Northern California, is if you have a presenter in a classroom situation. We have a monthly training program for new speakers and emerging speakers called ProTrack, and it's got 3 or 4 hours of content on a Saturday once a month. We record them, putting a digital microphone on them, lapel mic, and that presentation is put out as a podcast. In fact, presentations and classes back in iTunes, there's a subset of iTunes Music Store called iTunes U, stands for iTunes University, and you can find classes from MIT, Caltech, Harvard, available for free download as podcasts. And then finally, there's the type of podcast I like to do, which is the interview. So I go out with my digital tape recorder, meet people, say, at professional speakers association meetings and ask them questions. And most of those 60 or so podcasts I've done, I'd say 75% of them are interviews. All I have to do is prepare the interviewee, script them, say, you know, I'll be asking you a few questions about this, and then let the tape recorder run. Whatever form of podcast you do, though, in those three, I would say content is king. Having the right content is going to beat out the sound quality. It's not that you should not be aware of sound quality, but you remember in the Gulf War, or whenever it was, when we used to watch CNN and Wolf Blitzer was on the roof of the hotel in downtown Beirut or somewhere, and the rockets would be flying overhead, and you could hardly hear him. He'd say, well, I'm on the roof, the British missiles are coming. And everybody was glued to the TV because that content was so vivid and real in real time. If you have that right content, you'll beat out somebody who's got perfectly gorgeous production values with background music, but they just sit alone and they say, well, I had a bowl of plates for breakfast this morning. That's not going to be very compelling. So we talked about scripting.
Hey, Ian?
Now. Yes.
You know, something happened to your microphone or something, so it's a little hard to hear you. Would you mind checking your connection?
I will check. Pushing it in. I can switch to the phone.
Well, you know, as long as you're speaking up a little bit into the microphone, it sounds
okay.
Good.
Okay, is that better? I'll speak as loud as I can. Okay, so now I'm going to... By the way, how am I doing on time, Jim? About 4 or 5 minutes?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay, so I'm going to now talk about producing a podcast. Now, this is my blog. This is my photograph here, screenshot from a month or so back. I've highlighted it because here's a link to a tool called Audio Acrobat that I would recommend as a beginner's tool. I actually have a different way of producing it because I have a WordPress blog. I use a software called PodPress, but I don't want to get into the complexities of that. If you go to Audio Acrobat, you get to this website, audioacrobat.com, from my website. If you want to click on that button, it's the easiest way to get there. And you'll see you can have a free trial of this. Now, I will warn you that to use this month in and month out, there's actually a $19 or $20 monthly fee. But they give you 30 days free use. So it's like a magazine subscription. Log on. If you want to experiment with podcasting this afternoon, you might have to put in your credit card. Just make a note in your calendar 29 days from now to cancel. And you can play with podcasting, create your own radio shows. The reason they say radio shows is they actually give you multiple dial-in lines like a radio program, and you can have multiple people on the line. It's very simple, and it is amazing. What you can do here, you don't need any extra software. So for 30 days, you've got a free use of their Audio Acrobat. You can email your voice by having, it's got extra little bells and whistles. You can attach audio to emails. You can do all kinds of little extras. But what I'd like to focus on is the core of it, which is to put your audio files. So I've got my bio, I've got an intro and outro music, and I've got a couple of interviews I did. And I uploaded those to this website. I went in and I see there's three choices to get me audio. Bottom one is what I do on my main blog as well. I record the audio as an interview on a digital tape recorder or on the computer. I edit it with software called Audacity. This is a little technical, more technical than we'll get into today. And then I produce it, upload it. Second way that Audio Acrobat allows is just plug the microphone into the PC and away you go. You get excellent quality. And you get, the downside is, of course, you're not able to edit that. Here I can edit and clean up anything. Well, the simplest way is pick up the phone. They give you a number to dial from anywhere in the U.S. Or overseas. You can be on your home office or your cell phone. They do advise, they've got tips down the right here. They advise that cell phones obviously don't give as good quality. And you can record a podcast right there and then. So you could be at an event, you know, out in the boonies somewhere. You could be at a skeet shoot or whatever, a fishing competition, interview the winner of the contest, put it out as a podcast. Here's the information about the phone number, you're given a PIN number, and it's as easy as 1, 2, 3, 4. Now, I'm not saying Audio Acrobat is the only way to do podcasting, but having this ability to re-record and pre-record, recording a conference call like this call today, if we'd have logged in through Audio Acrobat, we could be putting together a conference call for multiple people and recording it and saving it as a podcast. So the third and final step, I'm moving on a little bit because I think I'm running low on time here, is publishing. Now, in Audio Acrobat, you just give the podcast a name. So you could be Ian's Interview. You give it a description and a title, and you say, oh, who is Ian Griffin? A bio, and you give it the name of the file, and away you go, you publish it. Here's a list of the podcasts I've done. And to publish, you also are given, this is kind of a cool thing that all podcast software does, it gives you some code here that looks very complicated, but basically you just highlight it. That allows you to put a link to your podcast in email, in your blog, or on your home website. So, of course, the beauty of the podcast system is also that people can subscribe to it. That's what these little RSS feed symbols are, to send people the link to subscribe to your podcast. You just send them that link in an email. And you can publish it to iTunes. Audio Acrobat allows you to do this. I've been doing that. If you go to the iTunes music store and search for Ian Griffin, you'll see 20 of my past 60 podcasts. So it's immediately available to the world. Here's how you submit a podcast to iTunes. Go to podcasts, say submit a podcast. In Audio Acrobat and in the software I use, you only do this once, and then it automatically updates the rest of the list. Here's my professionally speaking podcast. I say it's a forum for professional excellence in public speaking and executive communications. People who listen to it also subscribe to Toastmasters podcast, speech writing podcast. And here's the episodes from July back. There's some more that have been added since then. So the thing to remember about podcasting is you have a global audience for this. I get listeners from all over the world, just like with my blog that we talked about last week. Content is king. You've got to have compelling content for people to want to listen to you that's targeted to your niche. Audio Acrobat, check it out, but remember they will be billing you $19 a month if you don't cancel after the first month. If you do want to go ahead, it's probably good value. It's less fuss than having your own blog. And go check out iTunes, even if you don't want to create a podcast and listen to some compelling information.
So, Ian, you introduced me to podcasting about 2 years ago, and as much as I love technology, that was probably one of the things that scared me the most, because I just didn't understand that whole concept. But after all was said and done and you sat me down, I think what it all came down to me was I realized a podcast is nothing more than an audio file, kind of like a music file is an audio file, an MP3 file, and you're basically putting it on a website. Now, all the bells and whistles of being able to play it right there or you know, actually seeing the scroll bar of how much time is left, that's all added plus stuff. But if you can get an audio file on a website, you're podcasting. You know what? And Ian, by the way, I have seen a couple of messages to make sure that you're speaking a little bit louder. Is everybody able to hear me as I'm talking? Oh, we could not hear most of the section. And Ian, I can't. Okay, great. I'm hearing yet. I see. Yes. So Ian, we've completely lost you. So I'm going to go ahead and press on. The there is a site that we created on socialnetworking101.biz, and it's a community social network that everyone can participate in. We're going to show you the link at the end of this webinar. But one thing I also wanted you folks to know is there is a feature on that site, absolutely free, no cost, where you can upload your own audio files. Now, the site calls it Music, although I use it for my podcasting, and anyone can now just record something on their computer. Most computers have a little program that comes with it that allows you to record your voice, say something to the world, upload that file on that site, and you could be podcasting by the time, well, hopefully you're not doing it right now because you're fully intrigued with what Ian and I are saying, but maybe an hour after the conference you can have your own podcast up and running.
Okay, Jim, this is Ian. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
All right, I'm back on the regular phone. I apologize for the lack of quality in that last section.
And you know what, Ian? Could you do me a favor, and I'd like you to introduce the next section because I'm going to go ahead and call in as well.
Oh, all right. So what the next section is on video and YouTube. We've switched from audio, which was the podcasting side of the equation, which you know, involves a radio program of your own, to video and YouTube, and really this allows you to have your own TV station. So what people can do with a video feed, well, first of all, let's see if I can get control of the slides here. Apologize for a few of the glitches we've had today. Okay. Let's skip that slide. That's an awful lot of money. Okay. Video is the hottest thing on the internet these days. YouTube, and I couldn't believe this when I first heard it, but the statistics bear it out. YouTube is the second largest search engine in the world after Google. In other words, people are searching YouTube videos more than they're searching using other techniques. And the reason is, those of you who have never watched video on the internet might wonder, and it's a generational thing in some sense. A vastly larger percentage of Generation X or Y or the whatever they call the millennium generation, the people 35 and under, have watched, say, streaming video like TV or music videos on their, not just their computer, on their mobile device. And you go outside of the U.S., you go to Asia like Japan, and they're all on the subway. And they've been doing this for years, watching sports events on little, you know, equivalent to iPhones. So getting noticed on the internet these days increasingly means being available on video. And the new technologies that allow this are increasing every day, the flip video camera, for instance. Here's an example of how this works for a small company. The Stone Brewing Company, which is a small microbrewery, I think they call them, probably with 20 employees, has a presence on social media. For instance, they have followers on Twitter, nearly 7,500. We're going to be talking about Twitter next week. For video, they make excellent use of it by offering tours of the of their brewery. You know, wineries and breweries, places people who like beer and like wine love to go. We're just south of the Napa Valley here, and it's the harvest season right now, and people are coming from all over the country to check out the wineries, and they love to. If you've ever been to a winery, it's the same with some breweries. They offer tours. Well, for 4.5 minutes here, 4 minutes and 16 seconds, the Stone Brewing Company offers you a tour of their winery, and it's hosted by their, it looks like a guy who brews beer for a living, and they've even got little subtitles on it.
Ian?
So it's, yes.
Yeah, so I'm good to go now.
Okay, take over, Jim.
Yeah, so, you know, one of the things that this brewing company realized was, you're not going to get rich because you put a YouTube video online. But if you have a purpose for the videos, it can really enhance your business. And what they wanted to do was they wanted to bring back more of their customers so that as people were driving through their town, they'd stop by and see their brewing company. for the people that lived in town, they wanted to bring them back more and more. Through their little video campaign, they were able to entice people that would have normally just driven through this town to get them to stop by because they had seen the videos on the internet. And more importantly, for the local people, it was the local members that went to their brewery that were the ones that were in the videos. It was like a double shot on this particular one. So they were really able to expose their business through YouTube videos. Now, Ian mentioned about getting noticed, and that's really the whole thing about YouTube. It's another way of getting you in front of the faces of your customers. Now, it's one thing having a website, but when your business is you, for example, if you're a professional speaker, if you're a real estate agent, insurance agent, or any business that depends on you as a person, getting your face in front of your customers is going to be your best marketing, and that's why I love YouTube. As Ian mentioned, one of his favorite things to do on YouTube is to find out how to do things. And so I decided to check out on Google. I just typed YouTube how-to, and you could just see how many YouTube videos there were. Now, the first YouTube how-to video was how to open a beer bottle with a piece of paper. And sure enough, that did intrigue me enough to watch it. Well, this weekend I was out with a bunch of friends of mine, and we went backpacking in the Sierras. And we happened to bring some beers, and I just completely amazed them all because I had a piece of paper with me, and I did exactly like the YouTube video, and I opened up the beer bottle with a piece of paper.
That's great, Jim. Jim, you should mention, though, one thing that people might not realize. Who owns YouTube?
That's right. Google owns YouTube. And so YouTube is going to be a highly sought-after searchable area for Google, because they're going to want to promote their own system.
In other words, it's pretty well indexed is what we're saying.
It's well indexed, right. Now, I'm going to show you a little bit later on in publishing area how we're going to be able to handle this, but if you just put a YouTube video on or a video on YouTube and that's all you do, Google's not going to know what it is because Google is not watching every video. The only way that Google knows what your videos are about is through the descriptions and the titles that you use. So that's going to become extremely important, and that also applies to podcasts as well. Here's an example of a company that didn't expect their YouTube campaign to have the impact that it did, but boy, this is one of the examples that a lot of folks use when it comes to YouTube videos. BlendTech is a simple company that creates blenders for both the home and the industrial environment, and they wanted to get the word out about how good their blenders were. Well, one of their common practices, which had nothing to do with marketing, was to blend things that weren't normally supposed to be blended. For example, they would throw silverware in the blender because that's sometimes what happens when you're in a restaurant. Silverware gets dropped in. They'd blend up pieces of wood like utensils and spoons. They were blending anything and everything. And the marketing guy, as he was walking through their quality assurance area, decided, why don't we film this? Why don't we videotape this and throw it on YouTube? And it became a YouTube campaign. Now, they blended everything from a G.I. Joe action figure. And in this next slide that will be popping up, what they're actually blending here is an iPhone. And, yep, that's what happens to an iPhone when it blends. It turns into black, powdery dust. So if you haven't seen these videos on YouTube, I definitely would recommend you go check them out. It's called Will It Blend by BlendTech, and they blend anything and everything.
And the point is they've had over 7 million views, as you can see under the bottom of the picture. 7,146,000 people have watched that video, which probably cost almost nothing to produce except a half an hour of the guy's time.
That's right. And, Ian, through our webinar series, we must have talked about this BlendTech company to over 200 people already. So, I mean, you could see how the word gets out just because they did a great job on the YouTube videos. Now, Ian, do you think they use a high-tech quality camera to film this?
Well, they didn't use the flip camera, but they probably used a couple of $100 camera. It wasn't
like... That's right. It was a Sony Handycam.
A simple
camera that a lot of people have for their homes, and that's all they used to film this. There's nothing special.
Right.
So when it comes to YouTube videos, just like in podcasting, we have those three areas that we want to look at. We're going to script our videos, we're going to produce the videos, and then we're going to publish the videos. Now, we've got the scripting. In the scripting, I like to type or write my scripts down. I identify what the things I want to accomplish in my video are, and so while I'm doing the video, I'm not trying to think on my toes. I can actually just take a look at some notes. And sometimes, if I'm really feeling like I want to do some high-end work, I'll even cut out or edit out the areas where I'm looking at my notes. Most of the time, I just do real-time video where I film myself on the webcam, and I'll probably put like a little note paper next to my computer monitor so I can kind of take a quick look. My webcam is the video of choice that I use, although, as Ian said, he uses a flip camera, and I'm pretty amazed at how much Ian's able to do with his flip camera. I gave a presentation about a week and a half ago at a meeting, and here I look out in the audience, and there's Ian with his flip cam, and he's videotaping me, and by the time I got home from that meeting, he had sent me an email saying, here's the video I made of you, and it'll be posted to YouTube. It was just remarkable. So I'm becoming more of a fan of that flip cam. And then when it comes to the broadcasting or the publishing, YouTube is just a great system because it's free, it's simple to use, and the public is becoming very familiar with it. So when it comes to creating your YouTube video, you have to decide, how are you going to create one? Is this something that's where you're going to explain a topic, like maybe teach an audience something? Do you have an opinion that what you want to give? Maybe you want to rant and about some political issue that's going on? Or maybe you want to use it to answer questions. And that's a really nice thing to do because all of us have customers that end up asking similar questions over and over again. So if you create a YouTube video of it, you could actually now leverage your answers across multiple customers and you get your face in front of your customers, which is, again, getting noticed. Keep in mind that something out there is better than nothing. A lot of people are worried about, oh, boy, I don't have a high-end production environment. You know, is it going to look stupid? If you're worried about looking stupid in front of your customers, your YouTube video isn't the only thing you have to worry about because hopefully you're standing or at least working in front of your customers. So I'd say don't worry about that stuff. Get something out there. Take a quick video of you answering a question or doing something, and you can start getting noticed by your customers. Now, Andy Rooney is just phenomenally known, and Ian, with you, 2020, right?
It's 60 Minutes.
60 Minutes, thank you. I knew it was that. Yeah, he's phenomenally known for giving his opinion. And if you went on YouTube and looked for Andy Rooney, you're going to see a lot of different things from him giving his opinion. Now, he's probably never seen a webcam in his life, and he's probably never done a YouTube video per se, but because he has a lot of video out there, people have put this video up on YouTube. And you can follow the Andy Rooney style. Pick a subject, something that you might know about, or find something that somebody's having a problem with in an area that you have an expertise on, and then give your opinion. Very simple way to create content out there when there's nothing else for you to do. An example that Ian and I have both learned came from a gentleman by the name of Steve Miller. And Steve Miller, who's a social media marketing expert, answers his questions to his audience through YouTube videos. And so Ian and I have taken up that as well. At the end of the conference calls, if we haven't answered everybody's questions, what we'll do is just turn on our webcam, we'll read those questions out right off our computer and answer them right there. We record a simple video, which takes all but maybe 2 minutes, if maybe 3 minutes, and then from the computer, we post it directly to YouTube. Now we've provided the answers to the question, we've given our personal interaction with our customers, and we're getting more face time or more noticeability. And we didn't even have to think about what we were going to talk about. We used our customers' questions to give us the content. A great way to script. All right, now here's the hard part. How do you produce a video? Do you have to have all this fancy lighting and stuff like that? And the answer is, if you've been to our webinars, we're going to give you the most practical, easy-to-use way of doing this. And hopefully everybody on this call, if you have a webcam already or if you have a laptop with an integrated webcam, I would love to see you folks post a YouTube video and send it to me, even if it's just to say, hey, Jim, how's it going? So here we go. First, go to YouTube. It's youtube.com, youtube.com. And what you're going to do is you're going to click at the top right, sign in. If you don't have an account, create an account. It takes all but 37 seconds, and you'll get your own account name and sign on in. Once you get that account name, you sign in, and on the sign-in, and by the way, it's really hard to know that you're signed into YouTube, at least for me. Look for your name up at the top. If it says your name, you're signed in. If it doesn't say your name, then you're not. Once you've signed in, look for this thing that says upload. Now, I know we don't have anything to upload yet, but bear with me. It's just, I think, a poor title for that particular link in YouTube. So we're going to click the upload, and it's going to take us to this screen right here. And what most people have not seen is this link right here. It says record from your webcam. And that's what we're going to do. So I click record from the webcam. And there you go. That's the first thing you'll see. You'll see a picture of yourself, and it's actually a video. So you'll be able to see yourself moving, and you can adjust your chair, and you can see maybe I might need to clean up the office behind me because it looks a little dirty. Sometimes your computer will ask you questions like, do you want to allow this device to use your computer? And for the most part, as long as you know what's going on, as long as you know you're on YouTube and you're trying to record a video, then those questions are pretty obviously answered yes. Same thing, you probably were answered those security questions with the webinar. Well, the fact that you knew that you were joining a webinar is a pretty good indication that you can say yes, allow this application to access my computer. So you might see that, and so go ahead and allow it to access your computer. Now, I'm going to go ahead and show you some of the things about me, how I record myself on the webcam. This is what a close-up shot, and I use my camera to kind of give you a visualization of what I look like when I'm using my webcam. Now, you can see how close I am to my webcam. My webcam is a wide-angled webcam, and I'm not too sure why they created these types of webcams, but I need to literally pull the monitor, or I should say the webcam, within about 12 to 18 inches from my face in order for me to get a good shot and a good solid shot. You'll also know that notice that the closer you get, the more crisper your video is going to be. So don't feel embarrassed about getting up close and personal. I use a headset sometimes, but if you'll notice in this picture, something's missing. Where'd my headset go? How do you create a video without a headset when there's no microphone? And so what I do is I put the headset right below me. It's close enough for me to get the audio, but it's low enough so that it doesn't get picked up on the video. I have track lighting above my desk, so I sometimes turn that on to give me some good lighting. But more importantly, and I think everyone should do this if you're ever using some type of webcam, whether you're talking through Skype or YouTube, have one of these lamps on your desk. And I use a low-heat bulb, and so I'm able to put a piece of paper over my lamp, and that's what's called a very, very cheap diffuser. And so
as long as it's a low-heat bulb, a high-heat bulb, you'd have a fire on your hands, right?
That's true. Be careful. Don't, you know, what is this one of those things? Don't try this at home.
Right. Well, do it with a low-heat bulb.
There you go. Do it with a low-heat bulb. And so this is the whole setup that I have. It's my desktop with a webcam on it, with a lamp next to me, and I can create videos all day long. Now, when I'm done creating the videos, I could also, well, I could do things like adjust the sound quality. So I can right-click on the video and do some adjustments.
This is all from within YouTube, then. You're not talking about having a camera or a flip camera or
That's right. Everything through YouTube. I don't have any programs on my computer that allows me to record video, or at least if I do have them, I'm not using them. Everything is in from YouTube. So I can even adjust my microphone settings. Now, on the right-hand side, you see this green bar going up and down. And the way you know if your recording volume is high enough is whenever you hit your peak words, like the loudest things that you're going to say, you want to see that little red bar go all the way to the top. If you're not peaking out of the top, then you need to increase that volume. Now, on the other hand, if you're always peaked out of the top, then it's going to be feeling like you're screaming at people, and you want to lower it. So that's kind of how you adjust your volume. and you just play around with it. Record a couple of videos, play it back to yourself, and hear what you think it sounds like. Sometimes what I do is, while I'm recording my video, and I've finished it, I'll watch my video, and then I'll go watch somebody else's video on YouTube to compare how loud mine is compared to theirs. And that's an easy way of being able to determine if my volume settings were correct. Now, one of the challenges that I have on YouTube is a play button and a stop button. And so if you put your cursor right over that play button and hit play and start talking into the video, when it's time for you to stop, I usually have to look back down at the monitor to hit the stop button. And so I always end up catching myself looking down. If you position your cursor as smooth as you could, so you slide it over a little bit, you might be able to get a really good video without that problem. Or if you have a friend or a spouse or a kid that's in the room, you can have them control the mouse and tell them to hit play and then tap them on the head when they need to stop it. And that's it. So I'm done with my video. I hit the stop button, and now I have three choices. I can preview it, meaning I can watch it without having to worry about it being on the internet. I could say, I don't like it, I'm going to re-record it, in which case it basically deletes that video and starts from scratch. Or I can publish it. That publish button is as hard as it gets to get your own video on YouTube.
Now, Jim, I will have to say, the contrast between what you just did and the ability to create a video, like with a, I've mentioned the flip camera a couple of times, and somebody asked what they are. You go to Amazon.com and search for the word flip. They're a very compact camera the size of a cell phone, and they're called flip because a little USB thing flips out. But the big advantage to those, which is kind of obvious, is using free software like Windows Movie Maker or iLife on the Mac, I can edit the video. So the way you just showed it, you have to be a one-take guy. I mean, you can do it multiple times, and I've found myself doing it three or four times to get it right, but you can't edit in or out any verbal miscues. If you make a mistake in the middle, you've got to start again, right?
You're right. And, you know, that's a challenge. For me, I was so frustrated with the editing process that I never put a video up. And, you know, this is like within the last year or two. Once I found out that I can create videos immediately, because I'm a really impatient guy, I was just creating videos left and right. And now a lot of my customers in my consulting business, sometimes they'll have a question and they'll shoot me an email and say, hey, I forgot how to do this. I'll write, just go right on that computer, and I'll make a video. Sometimes I'll even make a video of me controlling an application so I can show them what buttons to click, and I send it on right out to them. It's a very quick way for me to interact with people. But I do agree, Ian, if I'm looking for something more professional, like a demo video for my speaking, I don't do that through YouTube.
Right,
I actually will record that.
Okay, we've got about 10 minutes left, so I guess we should speed up here and get to a couple of questions then.
Sure, yeah, let me go ahead and just show how easy it is to publish, and then we'll take questions from the audience. By the way, if you haven't been typing your questions in, please do so, and we'll, again, try to work them in, but we will answer them towards the end. Now I click that publish button, and I'm going to show you what I needed to do next for my video. Like I said, YouTube cannot watch videos, so they don't know what your video is about. They do quality assurance to make sure that there's nothing bad on the internet, but they're not going to use it to promote your video. So what you want to do is put a good title, and you want to put a great description, and we've always talked about tags, and tags are something like little short words that YouTube can relate what you're putting on the internet. I'm sorry, not YouTube, Google can relate what you're putting on the internet. So I put my name in quotes, quick capture, record, how to, and you can add as many other words that would fit into your industry. And if you scroll down, really you can leave all these options exactly as they are. You don't need to change anything. Scrolling all the way down, you get to save changes, and voila, there you go. That's as hard as it gets to publish a video. Now, once you publish your videos, you can up by your name, and I'll put a little highlight. There's a little arrow up here. If you click on that arrow, you can click on the word My Videos, and that takes you to your videos, everything that you've created. And in your video area, you can click any one of your videos, and let's say I'll click play on one of my videos, and it takes me to the screen. Now, on the right-hand side, this is what a lot of people don't even notice. It's this area right here. This is how you embed videos into your website. or if you're on YouTube, I'm sorry, at Facebook or LinkedIn, or if you're on the social networking site that Ian and I created for this group, you can use this to embed videos. Clicking on the little gear bar next to that will expand and let you choose options. For example, right now it has a gray background and it's this size 425 by 344. I like a blue background and I like a small size. So I click on those two things and it automatically updates this little code. When I'm done selecting my options, I just highlight that code and hit copy, go over to a site like our practical social networking site. I'm going to quick add a video. I pasted that code right there inside that quick add video, and I click add video, and now I'm done. And what happens? I now have my video embedded into a social networking site. And it literally took me about 3 to 4 minutes to complete that entire process. So what do we want you to know when it comes to video on YouTube? Start simple. Something is better than nothing. You don't have to have that viral video ready in order for you to take charge. Use a webcam. Real simple system, a microphone and a lamp. They're a system that you can buy from your local store. Webcams cost somewhere around $20 if you get a cheap one. Get a cheap mic for $15 and your lamp you can get from wherever. And when you're making your videos, people don't have a lot of time, so make them 2 minutes max. And then publish them with good descriptions.
Okay, so now we have 6 minutes left to the top of the hour. And before we share some of our goodies at the end here, we'll give you some websites and things that be good reference points. We've got time for some Q&A, and people have been typing in questions.
I got a question. You can answer.
Oh, sure, go ahead.
What do you think, Ian, is easier? Do you think video or audio is easier?
Well, as you showed, the video, providing you've got that ability to, you know, look in the camera and not sort of get all embarrassed, even though you're alone in your home. Of course, the rest of the world might be watching it the minute you publish it. You'd be so lucky. But the video, as you showed, is pretty darn easy. But I still think audio is the best, or the simplest. I know when I'm out with a podcast recording in mind and I go to an event, it's pretty easy to grab somebody in the hallway and say, can I do a quick podcast with you? And, you know, if I had a video camera, and I'm not being sexist here, but point that at any woman, and she's going to immediately wonder, is my hair okay? What am I wearing? And I'd have to be wondering about, well, what's the background look like? You know, is there sort of weird wires hanging down? To me, audio doesn't have any of those problems. It's just like us now speaking on the phone. But as you showed, video doesn't get much simpler. So the Audio Acrobat makes audio very simple. The video is either simple. Personally, I think subjectively, people often find audio less for stress because you don't have to worry about, you know, do you look flushed? Is there, you know, your hair in place and that kind of thing.
Right. I have to tell you, all the times that I create my YouTube videos, I always have to go look in the mirror, make sure my hair is combed, make sure I didn't forget to shave in the morning. So you're
yeah.
right. That is kind of something. All right, well, I saw some questions. So you answered the question on a flip camera. Flip camera is nothing more than just a little digital camera, but it specifically was made to upload to YouTube. And it
yeah,
is
that's the
very
best thing about it. It's got this format, that, and not all video cameras do this. YouTube has probably gotten really good over the years, but a couple of years ago I did my first YouTube video, and it took me all afternoon to reformat it into the right file format. You know, video has all these weird extensions like .avi files and .mp4 or mpeg4, and the Flip is already formatted for video for YouTube, and it's got some other capabilities, the software they provide with it to email your friends videos. So it's become very popular. The bigger disadvantage is it's got an internal microphone, and it often is best. If you go to my blog, you'll see a video I shot this morning of a panel discussion over at Electronic Arts in the Bay Area here, and the audio is okay, but it would not pass muster for a professional speaker. You want that lapel mic, which means a fancier camera with a jack in for the wireless and so on and so forth.
Okay.
We did have a question. Do you have to pay? I mean, we showed you audio on iTunes, and you've talked about video on YouTube. Do they charge a fee to host this or not?
Well, in today's internet world, there's a term called freemium, F-R-E-E-M, I don't even know how to spell it, but you can imagine, freemium. And it's a combination of the words free and premium. So a lot of vendors are giving things away for free in hopes that you'll pay for their premium services. Now, YouTube, you can only record 10 minutes of video on YouTube, and you can only load up to 1 gig. So what they're hoping is by getting a lot of people on there and using it, there will be some people that say, I'd love to use YouTube to teach my one-hour seminars or webinars, and then that's where you would pay for it. To answer your question, Ian, for what we would all need it for, free. You can usually find something
and iTunes does not charge to host your podcasts. My podcasts have been up there for 3 or 4 years, and they're free. So with only a couple of minutes left, Jim, I think we have a couple of things we want to cover before the end of the webinar here.
Yep, and you know what? Let me throw in a quick one, because I saw this question come up. I'll get this out. On that social networking site that we're going to show to you, which is Practical Social Networking, socialnetworking101.biz, I've got some recorded videos to show you how to create an account on YouTube, on Twitter, on Facebook, and it's where I actually record my screen. I'm showing you the mouse movements. The application for that is screentoaster.com.
Oh, and it's free.
Screentoaster.
That's like a training video to show you how to fill in a website. Okay, great. All right, so what is that website? One last thing is we have one more webinar in this series next Wednesday, same time, on the 30th, last day of the month, where we'll be talking about Twitter for the first 25 minutes and then integrating all of the social networking sites, how you get your blog to reflect on your Facebook and LinkedIn page, how you get your Twitter feed, and tie them all together so you don't have three times the work if you decide you want to be on three social networks.
And as we mentioned before, our Social Networking 101 Biz is a website that we created specifically for this group. Now, there's a few things that you can do here. First of all, this is where you would register for our social networking webinar series. For the most part, everybody on this call is already registered, but you might know a friend or a family member that is having problems with social networking or just can't get what Twitter's all about. Send them to the webinar series. It's free. We'd love to have them online. We also have the recording version of this webinar that you can purchase, and there's five parts of the series,
right.
And you can purchase that right through this website. And then we've got follow-on social or quick start networking clinics, and we've got live presentation workshops as well. But what I want a lot of folks to also look at, and this is, again, one of those free things, is if you click here to join the conversation, you'll actually be taken to a social network that we created specifically for practicing on. And you don't have to join. You can simply browse it and see what's going on, or join in and practice some of the things that you'd like to do.
Okay, so we're almost at the top of the hour. We hope that you've enjoyed this webinar on the audio and video aspects of social networking. I think they're going to be increasingly popular as time goes on. We've just seen the thin end of the wedge, and there's millions and millions of videos out there on YouTube and hundreds of thousands of podcasts to check out. So there's a great big candy store of stuff to enjoy. Stay in touch with us by email. I'm ian.griffin@exec-comms.com.
And my name's Jim Carrillo, and you can reach me at me@jimcarrillo.com. And more importantly, if you ever want to have any questions, you can reach us through socialnetworking101.biz, join in the conversation, and try to apply some of the things that we've taught you on these webinars.
We'll see you next week. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
This has been an audio-only recording. For the complete webinar, including visual screen information, visit socialnetworking101.biz.